fighting for America.
We will continue to call for the immediate release of detained U.S. citizens Saeed Abedini, Jason Rezaian, and Amir Hekmati.
Fighting for Idaho.
How sad was it in the streets of Paris as 40 world leaders walked down the street? Absent was the United States of America. Where was the president? Where was the vice president? Where was the secretary of state?
Fighting for you.
In this country, when it comes to medical care, we expect insurance to even cover the $4 aspirin. Yes. If you got into a fender bender every month, well, what happened to your premiums? They'd go up because you're filing too many claims. You are now high risk.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up, two governors are mad at the current governor. Is that really all the major news of today? I'm trying to think of anything else. Minnie, the stolen dog, is brought back. I was watching the news last night. I go, man, Idaho, America, how it used to be, where people care about one another. And we have a good time. We love our neighbors, love our friends. Even when we disagree with folks. And climbing El Capitan, we'll talk a little bit about that. Joining us now is Keith Ogarek. Keith, good to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. So, hey, here's the skinny. All the time I'm hanging out with people, they go, you know, I should write a book. Have you ever heard that before? I should write a book. I'm going to write a book. Everybody feels they have a book in them, right?
That is correct. In fact, the New York Times ran an article just a while ago, and they said that their research shows that 81% of the population believe they have a book in them.
And yet, a lot of us never follow through with it. Why is that?
Well, it's for a couple reasons. One, they don't know how easy it is to publish these days. And number two, they don't have a plan to get from idea to manuscript to finished book.
Huh. Well, I believe you have a lot of experience in this this realm that you want to share with us. So how easy is it to publish a book?
Well, one of the things that I've done through my career is I work with Author Solutions. We've published over 185,000 authors and 225,000 titles. So it's through that experience with this wide variety of people that I've been able to see some very key characteristics of authors who actually get to their goal versus people who just start a book and never quite finish it. And so one of the most important things to do is to set a date when you want to hold a copy of your book in your hand. And if you work with a traditional publisher, your editor would give you a publication date when you'd have to turn your manuscript in. But today you have the opportunity to self-publish, which means you can control when your book gets into the market. And so I always tell people, pick a date on your calendar, mark it on your calendar, and then the second piece of that is build a timeline to get there. So make sure you give yourself enough time to write the manuscript and edit the manuscript and do cover design and all the things that are necessary. And so those are two of the key things that I see successful authors do who actually get to publication. The third thing, which is a little more of an observation but has actually been validated many times, is that you need to make an appointment on your calendar when you are going to write. What I've learned over the years is that writers all have a better time for them to write than others. In fact, a few years ago, I was having lunch with a writer that I know is very prolific. She's published or self-published almost 30 books. And I wanted to test this theory on her, and so I was having lunch with she and her husband, and I asked the question, is there a time that's better for you to write than others? And before she could answer, her husband said 5:30 in the morning. He knew that she was more productive then. And I've asked this question of many, many, many authors, and they all do that. So if you don't make an appointment on your calendar, other things will just rush in, and you'll miss the best time for you to write. So those are three of the things. And then a fourth thing is to make yourself accountable. It's like any other goal in life, whether it's losing weight, stopping smoking, exercising. It's much easier to do it as part of a community than it is doing it on your own. And so that's an important thing. And what I've seen is that the people who do those things actually get from the idea to a finished manuscript to publishing a book. So
Keith, what gets me is, you know, I read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, and they have these folks that self-publish, they do electronic books, and they hit a unique genre or something, and they're making livings off it, some of them even more so. How realistic is that? Because everybody thinks if you write a book, you're going to be a John Grisham.
Yeah, it's probably not very realistic, right? And what I've learned over the years is that the last reason to write a book is to make a lot of money. In fact, the people who write it just to pursue money, oftentimes, now that doesn't mean you don't want to see if you can get a return on your investment. But the reason we write books is because we want to impact people through our writing. And one of the questions I always ask when I'm doing a seminar is how many people would you have to impact with your writing before you would say it was worth it for me to publish a book? And most people will only say 10 or 12. If they thought that they could write a book and impact people through that book, no matter whether it's a story or a memoir or a cookbook, whatever, they would say that it's worth it. Some authors will find the right space and it'll become big, but no one knows exactly what's going to become big. One of my favorites is James Patterson, who is a name very familiar to people, very successful. He was rejected 30 times before he actually found a publisher to take his book. And so no one knows exactly what's going to become big, but the most important thing is make sure you write your book and put it out there. Because what I say to authors is I have no idea how many books you'll sell if you publish, but I know how many you will if you don't.
Well, I think it can be intimidating, and most of us, it's been a while since we've written. Maybe it's been high school, maybe it's been college, and you have, where's the apostrophe? What's a comma? Where do you use the comma? Where do you use the semicolon? Grammar can be intimidating.
Yeah, it can be, but there's plenty of opportunities to find the right kind of editors that can help your manuscript be as good as it can be when it goes into its book form. A company like ours, we provide all kinds of editorial services, including in many of the packages that we have, there's an editorial assessment that will be almost like a prescription of kind of where are the areas you need to work on. The other thing, too, is there are a lot of freelance editors that you can find out there that can help you. And editing is an absolute key to any book, right? Because anyone who thinks that they can be a one-draft wonder and do it on their own, it's probably a little bit misled. You're still going to need someone who's got the skills and experience to make a good edit. Take a look at your manuscript.
So, Keith, here at 580KIDO, I think a lot of people have the fears that nobody wants to write something that they're emotionally attached to, and you working with these authors know this, and then they get laughed at because they, again, without editing, they may have misspelled something, or, when you write something down, you have that internal bias. It's kind of like people that do their own movies or videos. They think they're great, and it's far different from what you see in Hollywood.
Yeah, so the great thing about this time in history for authors is you can get a book, whether you self-publish or traditionally publish, that looks as good as any other book that's out there. The key is to have the right kind of cover design, the right kind of editing done. And anytime you put anything creative out there, there's always a risk. I mean, that is the that is the truth about anything creative. And I don't care whether it's whether you paint or whether you sew your own clothes or whether you make a meal or whether you write a book or whether you do a video, there's always a risk in our human nature that someone's not going to like it. But the stronger motivation should be that you believe you have something to say that can impact people's lives. And that's the most gratifying thing to be an author. Not everyone will like what you do, but you're not trying to write a book for everyone. You're trying to write a book that impacts the audience that you're targeting.
There we have it here at 580KIDO. How tough is it to get a deal with a traditional publisher?
Tough is an interesting word. What I know, because of our company, we're owned by the largest traditional publisher, Penguin Random House, and we run self-publishing imprints for many of the other ones. I will tell you that they look for particular things. It's not easy if you have a book that has a clear audience, it's a well-written book, and that you have your own social media platform that will help you connect to your audience. In fact, I have a blog called IndieBookWriters.com, I-N-D-I-E, BookWriters.com, and I have a blog post on there that talks about what traditional publishers look for when they're looking to pick up a title. And, if your listeners could go there and just search the keyword agents, and I think it would probably or publishers, and it would probably bring up that that blog post, and it lays out what they're looking for.
Well, so. Right, and again, you have Grisham, you have Patterson, as you've talked about, that have been rejected. Where do you get the strength, I guess, to drive on with this?
Well, I Yeah. Again, I've talked to so many authors over the years, and the key is that they really believe that they're going to say something to help people. That's the most important thing, that, to impact other people's lives. And again, for some people, it's a small audience. They want to capture their story for their own family and friends. For other people, they believe they have something that can help people all over the world. There's an author that I know by the name of Bronnie Ware. Bronnie wrote a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And her story is she lives outside of Brisbane, Australia, in kind of a rural community. And she was serving as a hospice nurse. And she began to see a theme in the people that she was caring for. And so she wrote that as a blog post, and people were greatly impacted by it. So she thought she might have a book. Well, she's out in the middle of nowhere in Australia, so how is she going to find a traditional publisher? So she went online, she Googled, and she found Balboa Press, which is a self-publishing imprint of Hay House, which is a publisher she recognized. So she self-published her book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. Her local paper ran a story. The Guardian in the UK ran a story, and then it just spread on Facebook very quickly. And so within a matter of 30 days, her book was being talked about all over the world. Hay House, the traditional publisher who owns Balboa, picked up that book, and it's now one of their largest-selling international rights book in the history of the company, because she tapped a theme that she had seen in the lives of people in Australia that actually is universal. What are the things that you don't want to die and regret? And so that's an example. But I can tell you, because I know her, I've spoken with her, she didn't start out to say, you know what, I want to be a worldwide phenomenal, I don't want my book, I'm going to write a book to be a worldwide phenomenon. She wrote a book because she believed she had something to say to help people. And that's the strongest motivation. And in that case, when you believe that, like I said, you have a few people who don't like it, but ultimately you'll impact the people you want to impact.
What about the difference between fiction and nonfiction? I don't know where these fiction guys come up with everything.
Well, again, there's a imagination is an interesting thing, right? I mean, it's the beauty of imagination that you can come up with any story that you want. There are common elements to great stories. Again, I'm going to reference back to my blog. I've got a blog post on the five essential elements of a great story, and so I think any good story has those five elements. But how you develop the characters, how you do certain things. A lot of times, it's your own experience that inspires you to write a story. There's a book recently that was self-published through Archway Publishing called Strays. It was written by a woman named Virginia Castleman. It's a fiction book. It's about the experience of some foster children. And Virginia actually was a foster child. And it was her own experience that inspired her to write this story of Strays. Simon & Schuster liked the book so much that they actually picked it up, and it's going to be released. If you go to archwaypublishing.com, you'll see Virginia's there's a video interview with Virginia. So sometimes what they come up with in fiction is actually inspired by their own lives.
That is amazing. Keith, we appreciate it. If people want to get a hold of you, what can they do?
So two things. You can go to my blog, indiebookwriter.com, I-N-D-I-E, book. And writers, W-R-I-T-E-R-S. And then also you can go to the Author Solutions website, and you'll find information there if you want to learn more about the publishing options that are available to you. There's a white paper that you can find on the Author Solutions website called The Four Paths to Publishing that I wrote that helps people understand what their options are today as well, too.
Well, Keith, thank you. We appreciate it. All right, 719, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO. Time for traffic on this.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Tommy Caldwell says he and his family travel 10 months a year, going from beautiful place to beautiful place. And while he craves Yosemite like food or water.
As far as big climbing objectives like the Don Wall, I might scale it back a little bit for a while. I think I aged about 50 years.
Kevin Jorgensen says next he'll head to France to Boulder, but he may want to heal up a bit first. Climbing El Capitan's Don Wall also took a toll on him.
Quite a bit of maintenance, yeah. We use sanding blocks to file down the shavings of skin that would catch on the rock.
This climb that they'd planned for the past 6 years took 19 days, and both said doing it together rather than alone was crucial to their success. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News Radio.
Well, a story of inspiration there. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. As we continue on, news, opinion, and always inspiration here. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Governor Otter found himself to be in a little hot trouble, hot water, if you will, with former Governor Batt and former Governor Andrus.
Back in 1995, the spent nuclear fuel coming into the Idaho National Laboratory was a huge concern for many and a highly debated issue that crossed party lines. It was that year that former Governor Cecil Andrus's work to keep the waste out came together in this agreement drafted by then-Governor Phil Batt. The one-of-a-kind deal between Idaho and several federal agencies said commercial nuclear waste could not be shipped into the Idaho National Laboratory.
The agreement specifically was designed to keep nuclear waste from coming into Idaho. They want to bring more in. It's a total revocation of what we're trying to do in the agreement.
Today, Batt and Andrus spoke publicly and emotionally about this letter sent from Governor Otter and Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin to the Department of Energy, expressing support for a new research project that would bring two shipments of spent fuel rods into Idaho.
It's going to be that they have created a Yucca Mountain in Idaho, that the two of them have done to this state what every other state has opposed and we have opposed to this date.
Andrus and Batt fear the deal would open the door for more waste to be brought in and say it could hurt the Snake River aquifer. But Governor Otter disagrees and says there would be no negative impact to the environment.
In fact, I think the positive impact of that decision is that, you know, it could be upwards of $20 million a year for the next 5 years for the lab.
But Andrus and Batt had another complaint. They say they were not notified of the decision. Otter said he thought they'd been told, and if not, it was an honest oversight.
My fault. If we didn't reach out to them and let them know before we wrote the letter, then guilty. I am guilty. But I felt that we had.
Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin says there's another important document involved in the discussion, a memorandum from 2011, acknowledging that the INL was not in compliance with the 95 agreement. Wasdin says the deal, now under fire, will only happen if INL cleans up waste materials already at the facility.
So here's what I don't get, and folks that have family near INL, pretty alarming stuff. So if we believe the Attorney General and the governor apologizes for not telling the former governors about the deal. With respect to the former governors, does Governor Otter have to go tell them what he's going to do all the time? So they just held a news conference blasting Governor Otter. Now you've got the law-abiding Attorney General Wasdin, saying that according to these documents, the INL hasn't been in compliance with a lot of regulations. So with respect, because not everybody is a nuclear scientist, we've got issues over there. We're talking about a nuclear waste site. That's like having a meth lab next to your house. And according to what we're hearing from the Attorney General, from our friends here at Channel 7, we can't get that right with the levels that we have, and we're going to bring in more stuff?
I'm very committed to maintaining the integrity of the 95 agreement, holding their feet to the fire and saying, you have to comply with that requirement.
Well, who has to comply? The INL, the feds, and we're bringing in more stuff? To me, it's like the shell game. Whoops, we didn't tell them. I really don't know. And again, I don't know what the procedure is here, the protocol that Governor Otter has to go talk to these two gentlemen that have done so much for the state. Nice to see them out and about. And look, nobody wants yucca. No yucca, yucca, yucca in Idaho. In an age of apathy, I got to give it to these two former governors for going out there and saying, hey, hey. And then on the other hand, Governor Otter saying, my bad, but do you really want a meth lab next door? Well, Kevin, how dare you? I've got relatives that work there. Look, I hope they're doing a good job. I hope they're safe. But if we're in violation of the agreement, we're going to hold their, we mean it this time. That it's like John Boehner and Obama. Oh, Obama, he's ran wild 22 times, but the 23rd, we're going to get him. And this is nuclear waste we're talking about. Nuclear waste that could impact our lives here. in the Treasure Valley, never mind the folks in Idaho Falls and Pocatello. Let's talk. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Thank you for having this great show on in the morning.
I sure wish I could catch your show more often.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
So we're talking about two governors going after the current one, turning Idaho into Yucca Mountain. Uh-oh. What do you have to say? Let's go to the phones. Terry, good morning from State College, Pennsylvania. Hi.
Good morning, Kevin. Hey, you know, when Three Mile Island back in Pennsylvania was had the possibility of melting down, I was living across the river at the time. Needless to say, you know, it was something that we thought about 24/7. And so I'm kind of, you know, we looked at wind patterns, that sort of thing. Where was it going to go? What was going to happen if it melted down? You know, mapped out the escape plan, so forth and so on. About a year ago, I caught an article over here in southeast Washington State, close to the Columbia River. You have a nuclear waste storage site. They found one of the containers leaking, and then, boom, quiet, no more news about it. About 4 months ago, I caught a little more news on it. Multiple containers had possible leaks. Not another word about it, and that's all I know. Interesting.
Well, and how it affects the story, remain calm, all is well. Hey, I'm no brain surgeon, Terry, but I think the Attorney General said he had a document that they have been doing, been abiding by the agreement for quite some time.
Well, you know, agreement. Anything with the government where I hear the word agreement, you know, the flags go up. I'm sorry.
So why would they bring in more waste?
Money. Favors. Cronyism, you know, the typical, you know, and I think your listening audience understands that. Why do they do anything they do? Well, if it's not something that has to do in benefiting the populace, then it's something that has to do in benefit to them. Period.
Terry,
there's no in between.
Terry, great point. Thank you, and thank you for the nice comments.
Have a good day.
Our great friend Terry from State College, Pennsylvania. Doug in CUNA, soon to be home of the big meat processing plant. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Hey, I think everybody tends to forget that we're dealing with politicians. Politicians here are the same as back in Washington. Every one of them, if their lips are moving, they are lying. And as soon as they think that we've forgotten about a comment that they've made or forget about a speech or whatever, if they think for even a second that they can make a backdoor deal and put a couple dimes in their pockets or get a little bit more power, they're going to do it. And then if and when they get caught, they try and make up some story. Oh, you know, we forgot about that agreement, or you know, I didn't really mean that when I said that. So, you know, people need to realize it's politicians are liars. It's the same here as back in Washington. I don't care anybody you elect as a politician. As soon as their feet hit the ground in Washington, D.C., they forget everything, every campaign promise that they made. And they go in and they make these sweetheart deals for themselves to put more money in their pockets or get a little bit more power or whatever.
Now, wait a minute. They're looking out for you, Doug.
You know, I haven't really gotten squat from the federal government that I can think of. But, you know, I mean, sure, I get to drive on roads, but I get to pay taxes for that, too.
Soon to be more taxes.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just like Governor Otter, you know, he comes up and. Well, you know, I think, we started at 7 cents for a gas tax increase, and then we went to 5, and then we went to 2, and I didn't get any of it. And it's like, you know, gee, I really feel sorry for you. You know, you've got a huge house, a bunch of land. You don't have to worry about money. The rest of us, you know, the poor working class out here, we have to worry about paycheck to paycheck to paycheck.
And but it comes down to, you know, right. Well, Doug, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
You too, our great friend Doug in CUNA. You know, if you're just tuning in, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. There was a big news conference yesterday at the Capitol where you had two former governors calling out the current governor. You had former Governor Batt, you had former Governor Andrus, and here's what they said at 580-KIDO, which we'll get to in a second here. But these guys were laying down the smack when we're talking about, well, nuclear waste. Are you down with nuclear waste here in Idaho? Do we have this? Let's take a listen.
For this order, offer of us accepting waste for research, contingent upon the compliance, is to give them more incentive to complete the high-level abatement plan. I think they got plenty of incentive already, and I think it's a mistake because the main part of the agreement is violated. If you take an ounce of the waste from the federal government, they want to give you 10,000 pounds. And they never always say they'll move it out, but they won't.
Just say no to nuclear waste in Idaho.
We want to be a receptor of nuclear waste. We must take it up with the people. It's their agreement, not my agreement at this point.
Got a point.
There have been an indication that we were previously notified of this. It's absolutely false.
It's pretty obvious that they were putting this together for many weeks. But they held off until after the election. And then on a busy weekend where you had the governor taking the oath of office, and the next day was the governor's ball, and then the activities of Monday, the state of the state, and the opening of the legislature, there was really not any opportunity in their mind for Governor Batt and myself to take issue with them and get any contact with them. Neither one of us have any intention of letting this decision by two of the elected officials of the state of Idaho come to pass. I can tell him what his legacy is going to be and what the Attorney General's legacy is going to be.
There you have it. Governor Andrus laying the smackdown. Tea Party Bob with Kevin Miller. Good morning.
Morning, Kevin. How are you this morning?
I'm telling you, Yucca Mountain's coming to Idaho.
Listen, you know, I'm glad you're talking about this. After that agreement was reached back in 1995, I thought it was going to be the end of nuclear waste coming in here, and I'm sure that most of the people of Idaho did. You know, it seems that our elected officials think they no longer have to be accountable to the public. You know, they just do whatever they want. The fact that Governor Otter and Attorney General didn't put this new shipment out to the public before they signed this or talked about it has to tell you something. Is it any different than not revealing that the government funds were cut off from the Wi-Fi connections for our schools, or the fact that our prisoners were at war with each other when guards weren't showing up and still getting paid for it? Now, if the feds haven't lived up to their contract to clean up, then heavens knows, why are we allowing more fuel rods to come in here? And we're talking about 37 tons.
Right, and that's a good point that the former governor's made. Hey, first of all, why didn't the governor announce this at the state of the state? I'd like this. Tax increase for the roads, more money for teachers, and, hey, we're bringing back nuclear waste, everybody.
Well, you know what that would have gone over like, lead balloon.
Well, that'll protect you from the radiation.
Very good. I like that.
Well, I'm trying to keep up with you.
You're always ahead of me. You know, there's absolutely no accountability here for the people of Idaho. The governor's broken the public trust. He just won a third term in office. And I'm amazed every day we hear more and more things that are coming out that the public's never known about. What else is in his little cabinet there that he hasn't brought out in the open?
Well, hopefully we'll have it here first. I got to run. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
The publisher of the Gem State Patriot, Tea Party Bob with Kevin Miller. Coming up next, Add the Words is going to happen, allegedly. We're going to talk to one state representative that said, look, I'm keeping my promise to the people that elected me. We'll talk to him next. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
7:53, Kevin Miller in the morning. We're joined by the Assistant Majority Leader in the House, Representative Brent Crane. We've been talking about you for quite some time. He's on business, state affairs, and ways and means. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I think the last time we were talking to each other, we were at Five Guys and Mitt Romney was in town.
Absolutely. A great day.
Yeah. So, before we get to Add the Words and everything else in the legislature, your thoughts on Mitt Romney possibly thinking about jumping in one more time?
Well, I think he's going to. I mean, all indications are pointing to the fact that he's organizing his team. He's starting to get his financing in place. Look, he's done this twice. He knows what it's like. He knows what he's signing up for. And I will not be one bit surprised if Mitt Romney's name is on the ballot.
You know, and you know this because you've been in the arena, but I thought he was perfectly set up after the last time he was doing the appearances, and I kept saying he's sounding too good, he's too engaged not to be thinking about a run, but he said several times, nope, 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 nope. The critics are going to say, well, there he goes making one decision and going back on it, but what do you make of that as someone who has run campaigns, taking a look at the landscape and then jumping in?
Well, you have to assess, is the timing right? Is this the time that I should jump in again? And you weigh that out. Hey, I said I was not going to run, but you've got everybody on your side and in your camp begging you to run. You weigh all that out, and then you have to make the determination, is this truly the right time? I think when push comes to shove, and at the end of the day, you'll see Mitt Romney on the ticket in 16. I really do.
Is it too soon to get a snapshot of what this session is going to be about?
No, it's not. A lot of those issues have been talked about and vetted up front. The governor laid some of those issues out on Monday. And so you're starting to get a flavor and a sense as to what some of those issues are going to be.
Now, in the past, it's been the health exchange. It's been guns. This time around, perhaps restoring some more funding to education, a tax cut, a fuel tax, which has been percolating for quite some time since it was shot down the last time. The governor is putting it on the legislature to come up with that.
I think the governor took a very wise approach, and he learned a lot from that last gas tax debate. And that was, let's not tell the legislature how to get the funding. Let's use the collective wisdom of the legislature and let them come up with the idea. Let me address the issue that there is a need out there and let them come up with the idea of how we're going to secure that funding, whether that is through a gas tax, whether it's through registration fees, whether that's through taking some money out of the general fund. Let them make that determination, and then we'll move forward from there.
How do you deal with it? And I don't know if you're listening, Doug from CUNA calling in saying, how can you tell if a politician is lying? His lips are moving. They say one thing and do another, whether it's at the state level, the district level, the federal level. There's a lot of frustration with elected officials.
I understand exactly where Doug is coming from. And unfortunately, in this business that we call politics, those of us on the inside as well are frustrated because we see the same thing. We see the issues that a candidate will put forward on their palm card or on their website, and then when they come to Boise or they go to Washington, D.C., all of a sudden their position changes. It's just as frustrating to honest individuals that are inside the process as it is to citizens that are watching from the outside.
And coming up, we'll talk to you about the hearing the other day concerning the committee meeting concerning the hearing on Add the Words and what is happening and what isn't. We applaud your stance on sticking to your principles and defending the Idaho Constitution and traditional families. But before we get to that, I'm just trying to think of any other issues that are going to come up in the legislature that you can see that we haven't heard about yet.
Well, one of the ones that when you were ticking through the litany of issues there that the governor had mentioned, one of them that has got a lot of talk, the governor briefly touched on it in his State of the State, was Medicaid expansion, whether the state is going to do Medicaid expansion or not. And the governor simply told the legislature, hey, look, you've got your main committees, health and welfare committees. Why don't you guys take a look at the recommendations that my health care task force, the Medicaid task force, has been talking about? And see if any of those are areas where you feel like that they're right and that we should move forward, or if we should pause and not do anything right now. So that Medicaid expansion is something that some of the germane committees possibly will take up. However, I'm not hearing that there's a lot of fervor or excitement around expanding Medicaid inside the Capitol.
Is it too soon to take a look at budgetarily how we're doing based on, you know, comparative years? The governor talking about bringing back some money for education. We touched on the gas tax. But, I mean, as far as what type of budget we're going to have to work with, is the state on the road to recovery?
The state is on the road to recovery. The state is doing very well, and the governor is projecting a 5.5% increase in general fund revenues. The revenue committee met yesterday, which is a separate committee. And they came up with the exact same recommendation that, you know what, we believe the governor's right, that our state revenues are going to grow by 5.5%. The governor set his budget growth for only 5.2%. So he left some money there on the table that we can use for potentially tax relief.
More coming up next. It is 758-580-KIDO. 40 degrees in Nampa. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up next, we'll talk more with Representative Crane. If you have a question concerning the legislature, add the words, the gas tax, nuclear waste. Well, great thing about it is he can answer those questions. I'm just the facilitator. That's coming up next. Keep it here. Stay informed. By the way, phone number is 580-5436.